So essentially, your Rushmore is Darren Randolph, Katie Taylor, Laura Whitmore, and me.
OTB AM's Mount Rushmore, live every weekday at 7:30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
I'm not worried about it. I can stand over this. Cora Staunton, Lee McHale, Kevin Kilbane, and Kieran MacDonald.
OTB AM's Mount Rushmore.
Right, you're very welcome along to this week's edition of Mount Rushmore, and we're going to Leitrim, and I'm delighted to say we have Tommy Conlon, columnist with the Sunday Independent, and Sean McGoldrick, sports writer with Sunday World, and author with us to talk to us about lovely Leitrim. And I'm going to have to confess here that this is a voyage of discovery, but come on, come all, let's learn about the history, the great and varied tapestry that is the history of Leitrim sport. Before I get into this, lads, I understand... sources have told me, aka Tommy, that there's a bit of a beef between the north and the south of the county. Tommy, what part of Leitrim are you from, and give us the nature of this beef?
It's an ancient tribal feud, Gerard, that goes back to Mesolithic times, if not even Paleolithic times. But, you know, we're trying to, you know, be a little bit more mutually tolerant these times in the current era of, you know, peace and goodwill to all men. So I'm from South Leitrim. More or less, but right on the border with County Cavan. And a lot of people wouldn't even know that Leitrim would have a border with County Cavan, but I was born about, Ballinamore is only about four miles from the Cavan border, and so there's a strong Ulster kind of influence on Leitrim in terms of commerce and I guess sport and pretty much the sort of lived experience of people, at least on the on that side of the Leitrim border. It does border Northern Ireland, Ulster, Cavan. There's that side to it too.
Yeah, of course. It's long and thin, and as look at it, the population is tiny. It's the smallest, least populous county in the country. Sean, what part of the county are you from?
So I'm from North Leitrim, and I'm an authentic Leitrim man. Not saying that Tommy isn't now, but actually I was born in Manor Hamilton General Hospital, which was the maternity hospital in Leitrim for down through the decades until I think it closed there about maybe 25, 30 years ago. So there's only a few of us left, you know, who were born there. So our influences would come from the other end. As you say, we're a long, slender county. So I'm from a place called Newtown Manor, which is halfway between Manor Hamilton, which is in Leitrim, and then Sligo, which would be the big town in the centre. So we would tend to gravitate, North Leitrim people would tend to gravitate more towards Sligo than towards Carrick and Shannon, which is the county town. But the north south split is a bit like North Dublin and South Dublin. Like we would see ourselves as the looked on and trampled on people, you know, but we're trying to break out of that mold at the moment. But the North Leitrim, it would have an influence on sport in the sense that a lot of North Leitrim people would have been supporters of Sligo Rovers, and they would be seen as kind of a local sports team. Now, it's not so much in the last, since summer soccer, since the League of Ireland went to summer season. It's not as pronounced because obviously the GA is the big sport in Leitrim. But when I was working and living there during the winter, you see lots of Leitrim people at the showgrounds every Sunday.
Okay, right. So there's a soccer interest at least. Tommy, is it purely a GA county? Are we to be expecting four GA heads to be chiseled onto whichever mountain we decide to go here?
Yeah, pretty much a monoculture sporting wise. Although as we'll find out, there is a distinguished tradition in athletics, track and field, and that, and historically, of course, there would always have been a bit of a crossover between the Gaelic Athletic Association and I guess the BLE, as it was, you know, Irish athletics and that. But unless Sean has other information. I mean, I think basically it would be fair enough to describe it as pretty much a GA monoculture, more or less. Sean, yeah. Would there be more to it than that?
Well, as you said, we would have a tradition of athletics, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. There's one story I'd like to tell, which shows just a bit of history. We're proud boasters of the fact that a New Zealand All Black World Cup winner actually played both rugby and GAA at Leitrim. Actually, I wrote the story there a few weeks ago during the lockdown. Bernie McCahill, who was a centre on the New Zealand team that won the, when he was on the squad that won the, or when New Zealand won the world, the first Rugby World Cup, there was a man from Drumshambo, Aidan Hearn, who knew him very well. A lot of his family were in New Zealand and he went out there. And the two of them became friends. And through him, Bernie McCahill played GAA, and he also recruited Zinzan Brook to play GAA. And they played in, actually, they played in the Australasian Championship quite often, and New Zealand, as it was then, actually won it one year. But anyway, the story was that the year after New Zealand won the Rugby World Cup, Aidan Hearn got together this kind of a GAA Barbarians team, and they came to the Drumshambo where Hearn is from, and for Christmas 1988, and there's a rugby team, or the only rugby club in Leitrim is Carrick and Shannon. In the early days, it used to be called East Connacht, but they're called Carrick and Shannon now. But on St. Stephen's Day, they used to have this match between a Roscommon selection and a Leitrim selection among the club themselves. So in 1988, the New Zealand All Black turned up and lined out with Leitrim in the challenge match. And then the following week, they actually played a GAA match in a place called Ballon and Lara between an all-star selection and a local team drawn from Alan Gales, which would be the club under Drumshambo and Ballon and Lara. And actually, Eamon McGowan, who was a big GAA figure at Leitrim for years, he actually scored a hat-trick of goals. The match ended in an honourable draw. But, so that's our connection. That's our big connection with rugby.
There's a lot to be said for honourable draws. I've got to say, of all of the cases that we've had people make so far, that is literally the most tenuous for anybody, for any connection to a World Cup winner. I mean, I can see the children of immigrants, I can see all that kind of stuff making sense, but once played a game with somebody from Drumshambo is right up there, top of the list.
Well, I was just doing that as an entertaining allude.
That's fair enough. So he's not on your list. Bernie McCahill,
no, he's not on your list. Yeah, I was tempted, but I said, yeah, as you said, the length was a bit tenuous, so I discarded him.
Tommy raised the athletics. You've got five Olympians, in fairness, for a county with 30,000 people living in it. That's not bad.
Yeah, it's only when I actually did the research that came up, which I thought was quite an amazing statistic. We would have a tradition in race walking going back decades, and it's not surprising that two of our Olympians were race walkers, Colin Griffin and Laura Reynolds. And interestingly, Colin Griffin is the son of Porrick Griffin, who would have been an outstanding administrator in athletics, not just locally, but nationally. He's a former president of BLE. And also, as people know, there was a very damaging split for decades in Irish athletics, which was eventually sorted out only in the last 20 years. But behind the scenes, particularly in the 1960s, Porrick Griffin played a big role in that. But going back to the Olympians. Our first was Eddie Leddy, who ran in the 72 and 76 Olympics. And he was a scholarship student, as was his brother PJ, in East Tennessee State University. And they formed part of what was called the Irish Brigade out there. And one of them, one of the Irish Brigade, was Frank Greeley, who most people know as the longtime editor of Irish Runner and a person who has been associated with athletics for decades. But Frank was a very talented runner in his own right, and actually set the 10,000 meter junior record about 50 years ago, and it still stands. But they were all students together in East Tennessee State University, along with Neil Cusack, who won the Boston Marathon. And there was another few Irishmen, and their big claim to fame was that at the National Collegiate cross-country athletic championships in America, which is a huge thing. In 1972, the East Tennessee team finished second overall, with Cusick won it, and Eddie Liddy was third, and PJ was in the top 10. In the 70s, Eddie Liddy was one of the outstanding distance runners in certainly in Ireland, and you know, made his way on the world stage. I'll tell you one amusing story. I wrote a book last year about the history of the Dublin Marathon, and I spoke to Cusick because he won the second Dublin Marathon. But he was telling me a story that way back in the early 70s, in those days, you know, the students wouldn't have come home for Christmas. So one year, himself and the Liddy brothers decided to head down to Atlanta from Tennessee and took part in the a marathon down there. The Peach Bowl Marathon, it became a very famous marathon in America subsequently. And Cusack won it in what was then a world record time for he was only 19, I think, at the time, around 2:18. And Eddie Liddy was third. And Cusack reckoned he'd have ran actually faster, except he went back to accompany Eddie at some stage during the race. But,
I remember. sorry, Sean. I remember Eddie Liddy as when I was a child, baby. I'd say barely walking, because Eddie Liddy was from the parish of Drumreilly, about 3 to 4 miles out from side of Ballinamore. His club was Ballinamore AC, Ballinamore Athletics Club, and Sean mentioned Pádraig Griffin. I mean, sure, Pádraig Griffin was Mr. Athletics in Leitrim and one of the stalwarts of Irish athletics in the 1970s and 80s. He was chef de mission, I think, chef de keep for an Irish Olympic team. I don't know if it was in Moscow.
In Moscow, I think it was in Moscow, actually.
Wow. But Eddie Liddy became an Olympian, really, and Eddie Liddy himself credits Pádraig Griffin with the coaching, with the influence in Ballinamore. But as a child, I remember, I have this. It's sort of an isolated memory. I have no context for it, except remembering being down in the Gaelic football field in Ballinamore one day. I don't know what any of the circumstances, except I saw this lone figure running laps of the field over and over and again, and what I remember more than anything, I wouldn't have understood about his prowess at all, except that I was told that was Eddie Liddy. And he had this jet black afro. And that's what I remember from it. He had this sort of enormous jet black afro and just looked a very, very rare and unusual man. And even just visually to a child. And then I was told he was going to the Olympics or had been to the Olympics. And he, as Sean said, he ran in the 3,000 meter steeplechase at Munich, and in the 5,000 and 10,000 meters in Montreal. And I just remember being as a child, and it stuck with me. Being awestruck that our little community had someone who had been to the Olympics. He was going to the Olympic Games. You know, it had the kind of a sort of mythical. Idea, mythical sort of quality. It was almost like a man going to the moon. Imagine like someone from your little parish or town, and he's going to the Olympics. And that's why Eddie Liddy always stuck lodged. It was a childhood impression. And yeah. I was just researching this last night, Jared, if I may, and it turned out that Eddie Liddy ran world class. Times, his personal best were and would be considered apparently world class today. 5,000, 10,000, 3,000 meter steeplechase. And as Sean says, Ireland's first Olympian, Leitrim's first Olympian, a double Olympian. And I suppose someone we would remember or whose name would resonate, the name resonates, Eddie Liddy. He's definitely someone that maybe not nationally known, but we would have remembered.
Okay, so it's safe to say you both brought him up unprompted that he is definitely on Leitrim's Mount Rushmore. Sean, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And, okay.
My second choice would be another of our Olympians, would be Frances Cryan, single scholar. Actually, she could be described as the first lady of Irish rowing, because she was the first Irish woman rower to be selected at Olympic level. She competed at the 1980 Games in Moscow and just missed out. I think I was reading an interview with her there by literally 2 centimeters for her place in the finals. So she was ranked 7th overall. And it's interesting because we come on to the GAA and its huge problems in Leitrim life, and particularly the Connacht Championship win. But the Leitrim Observer, the local paper, did a survey a few years ago, and her performance in Moscow was selected as the greatest ever Leitrim sporting moment. It actually surprised me a bit, but that's what they decided. So, I mean, she was brought up, she was born in Carrick and Shannon in the family run hotel, which she runs, or a guest house and bar, it's now a hotel, which she runs. So she was literally, you know, across the road from her home was the River Shannon. So there was a rowing club in Carrick and Shannon, and she started off there as a young schoolgirl. And she started off, I think, in a Coxless Fours. But then she eventually graduated to the single sculls. And our coach was a local man, Aidan Nangle, and he had a huge influence on her career. And she won, I mean, she was the queen of single sculling in Ireland. She won 11 titles in a row. So she dominated totally from 1976 to 1986. And she was just, I mean, it's 40 years ago now, she was just, I think, 22 when she competed in Moscow. I normally would have expected her to go on and compete at another games, but it appears there was a difference of opinion. I'm not sure whether it was with the Olympic Council of Ireland or the Irish Rowing Union, but controversially, she wasn't selected for the Los Angeles Games, which was a pity because the Eastern European boycott. I mean, she probably, you would have imagined she might have made the final there, but she continued. She competed at World Championship level, and she tended to finish 9th, and they were saying, well, you need to finish 6th. And then there was an issue about her. They wanted her to move her training base from Carrick and Shannon to Dublin, which I presume meant Blessington Lake. So basically she was a single Olympian, but given her historic role in Irish rowing, and I mean, there's been nobody else in Leitrim terms like her since or before, so I think she's worthy of inclusion.
I think a trailblazer who makes it on the global stage is obviously always somebody worthy of consideration. I think, Tommy, we might have a bit of consensus on this as well, because I'm fairly sure Frances is on your list too.
Yeah, I was actually talking to my friend and colleague from the Irish Times, Ronan McGreevy, a journalist and historian. He's from Carrick and Shannon, and he was saying he remembers as a child a cavalcade that was organized for Frances Cryan when she came home from Moscow, and a big procession through the town of Carrick and Shannon. Huge turnout crowds came out to greet her and that, and she was part of his childhood. And indeed, we always, low profile person, I think, but again, I mean, and it's only actually maybe in many years later when we became more familiar, we in Ireland, I mean, with rowing as a sport, and we've come to appreciate what a brutal sport it is in terms of its demands, as you well know, and any athlete, that how lonely it must have been for her in a way, and how hard it would have been. Really doing it on her own with her coach, Ed Nangle. And even then, and maybe even since then, I don't think many of us would have had a concept of the enormity of the work that's required for her to become an Olympian in Moscow, as indeed it is for, it would have been for everyone, of course, every Olympian. But it's kind of something heroic about that, because I doubted if rowing had much of a support infrastructure around it at the time, but she had the, as Sean said, the River Shannon right on her doorstep, and she obviously ploughed thousands and thousands of miles up and down that river, and it took her to Moscow, and there is something pioneering, I think, about Francis Crian's role in Irish women's sport.
Okay, so we've got Eddie Leddy and Francis Crian. We have a consensus on that. Are there any non-Gaelic footballers that are in the conversation left? Because if there aren't, I'm going to bring in our special guest here. But are there any other non-Gaelic footballers left, Sean or Tommy?
Well, we should mention our other Olympian was Breed Connolly from Kinloch and North Leitrim, who competed at the last Olympics in the marathon.
And so, Colin Griffin.
And, well, we mentioned Colin. Yeah, competed in two Olympics. And uniquely about Colin was that he also coached Laura Reynolds in her Olympic appearance. So I'm not sure that many people have done that, to be an Olympian and also coaching an Olympian around the same time. And Colin, actually, since he retired from race walking, has become a very good, at national level, a very good marathon runner. So he's in the frame.
Yeah,
he's in the frame.
Did we mention that Colin is Pádraig Griffin's son?
Yes, we mentioned that, all right.
Sorry, Sean, I must have switched off there for a second.
You're forgiven.
Okay, we've got Emlyn Mulligan with us as well. Emlyn, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. How's things, lads?
Yeah, very good. So,
how are you, Sean? How are you, Tommy? How's it? Thanks for having me on, Ger. Good to see you.
How are you, Emlyn?
We've got Eddie Leddy and Francis Crian, but the conversation is about to turn to Gaelic football. And Sean, do you want to lay out who you think are the Gaelic footballers who are worthy of a spot on Leitrim's Mount Rushmore?
Okay, well, my choices would be Paddy McGarty and Mickey Quinn, with honourable mentions for Mickey Martin. I will have to include Emlyn, not just because he's here.
I don't think so, Sean.
And also a Leitrim man who played all his football in Cavan. He was from what would be my hometown, Manorhampton, Enda McGowan, who actually won two Railway Cup medals, which not too many Leitrim players have managed to achieve over the years. And one other player, Father Harry O'Carroll, who was also from Leitrim, who had a very short career because after he was ordained to the priesthood in, I think, around 1970, and he spent the rest of his life, as far as I know, in working on the foreign missions in Japan. But in 1969, he was on the Connacht team that won the Railway Cup, and they didn't win again. Connacht didn't win the interprovincial series again until the new century, shall we say. But actually, I was just looking up this. In the 1970 final, Connacht v Ulster, and Ulster, he was marked by his fellow townsman, Enda McGowan, who was playing for Ulster. So McGowan ended up winning, I think, two interprovincial medals, but Harry O'Carroll won one. So that's my broad outline of...
Okay, that's great. I think the treachery of playing for Ulster against Connacht, though, should immediately disbar you from a place on the mountain. Emma, let me ask you this. Who was your hero growing up as a young Gaelic footballer? This might be a tricky question, because you obviously would have Donegal roots as well. So who were your heroes? Were there Leitrim footballers that you kind of aspired to be when you were a kid?
Yeah, I suppose I came in at a time. I moved to Leitrim in the end of the year 1994. So I suppose 1992 for Donegal, Windall, Ireland would be more on my line of things in terms of players I would have been looking up to, you know, and the likes of Declan Bonner and that. But obviously, living so closely to Leitrim, you know, you would have heard of the greats of 94 and the likes of Seamus Quinn and Declan Darcy and these players, and obviously Mickey Quinn and that. So, like, obviously, it's just disappointing, I suppose, and there's such a gap between them players and what's going on now, and, you know, the achievement of them lads. And I suppose at my age now, you're nearly getting sick of listening to 1994. You know, you wish there was more fellas of my generation that we could be talking about. But what them men achieved back then was obviously massive. And as Sean alluded there, the likes of Paddy McGarty, I suppose they're a different era than me, but from talking to people, and my wife, she's a niece of the great Mickey Cairns here from Sligo. And I suppose he's one man I'd chat a good bit now and have a pint with. But he spoke to me about Paddy, and the way he spoke about him and the high regard he has him, he must have been an absolutely phenomenal talent, you know. And I suppose that's where, when I was writing down the names, and I had the usual names that Sean has, well, he's a lot more than I have, but Paddy was definitely number one on the top of the list, just basically from Micheál Curran's own perspective of it, from being such a great footballer and regarded nationally. For him to say the stuff he said about Paddy McGarty, one can only imagine of what a talented footballer he was. And to play up till he was 41 years of age. I think he made his debut at 16. You know, it's an incredible thing to look back on. And I suppose, unfortunately, never got to see likes from playing, but definitely he'd be the top of my list here on it today.
Okay, well, he gets super extra bonus points for being endorsed by Mickey Cairns, who's on the Sligo Mount Rushmore. So that's a double whammy for him. So I think we're getting rubber stamping here. Tommy, what's your recollection of the mythology around Packy?
Again, like everyone else, I mean, it was McGarty this, it was Packy McGarty as in child growing up. You just heard everyone had an interest in Gaelic football around Leitrim was McGarty, Packy McGarty. When I eventually became a sports journalist, he was one guy I wanted to meet, and I interviewed him amazingly 20 years ago now, Ger, for the Sunday Independent. I'd never met the man, but he was very interesting to talk to. And if I may, I might share one or two quotes from the piece.
Oh yeah,
I'm open to correction on this, but he made his Leitrim debut, as Emlyn said, at the age of 16 in 1949 and played his last game for Leitrim in 1971.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what they call a lengthy career by any standard. He was 20 years of age when he was selected on the Railway Cup team for Connacht. That was in 1954. And as well, you know, the Railway Cup was very prestigious. It was some sort of a precursor of other, I guess, in a way you could say, of the All-Stars and of the cream of the, you were the best of the, you were the best in the country if you're selected on your, or the best in your province and you're competing among the elite nationally. He was 20 when he played for Connacht in 1954. He scored 1-4 on his debut for Connacht against Munster in Tralee, scored a goal in 4 points, as I say. He had Sean Purcell of Galway, Páraic Carney, and Tom Langan of Mayo with him. McGarty says here, "I always remember after I scored my first point that day, Páraic Carney came over to me and said, 'Well done, Junior.' That was nice of him, but I wasn't overawed. I always had self-confidence. I remember even marching behind the band before the game, someone saying to me, 'You're out of step.' I said, 'I'm all right. Don't worry about it. I couldn't care less.'" And so he talked to the national stage like he belonged there.
I'm just reading here. He's the only Leitrim player chosen on the Connacht GAA team of the millennium as well. So he was 48 when he played his last inter-county game, having started at 16.
Well, 49 to 71 is, what's that, 22 years? No, he'd been 38.
38. Yeah, of course. 48, ridiculous. Bad math on my part there.
He'd be the only Leitrim player that would have, I think he'd be the only Leitrim player that would have won two Railway Cup medals. They won back-to-back in 57 and 58. And they also, by the best of my knowledge, he's the only Leitrim player to have played in six Connacht finals. So the Leitrim had an excellent team in the late 50s. So they were in the final in 57, 58, 59 and 60, and unfortunately beaten by Galway, who were had been All-Ireland champions in 56 and were beaten finalists. So they were one of the top teams in the country at the time, Frankie Sockle and Sean Purcell. I think Tommy will
I talked to Packy, if I may, Ger Emlyn, from that in that four in a row of Connacht finals, 1958 was the one that got away, beaten by 2-10 to 1-11. And McGarty said, his quote here in this, when I interviewed him back then, he said, "At half time, Leitrim were four down at the break. And quotes, there were shocking speeches in the Galway dressing room at half time. Shocking. There was only a partition between us and the boys were hitting it." And McGarty, let's not totally romanticize it. We would have heard growing up that McGarty got very rough treatment from Galway teams, from that Galway team. And I remember Jack Mahon went on to become a GA writer himself, a journalist, and was part of that legendary. Was he part of the three in a row team, Sean?
No, he played in 56.
He was on the 56 team.
He would have been on.
But I remember hearing it said that McGarty got serious punishment from the Galway backs that time. And I met Jack Mahon in Croke Park one day on the press. I said, Jack, I heard about you that you pulled the shirt off McGarty in 58. And Jack just grunted at me.
The problem would have been that, as Emlyn knows, that when the Leitrim wouldn't have been blessed with too many star forwards, so the opposition would decide that if they could stop McGarty, then they could stop. And there was no Emlyn, black card in those days.
Have you any experience of this, Emlyn, with the Galway defenders? Kind and inquiring after your health these days? Come on through.
No, I don't think the Galway or the Mayos are too worried about a lot of us Leitrim lads. But no, I understand where Sean's coming from. You know, as you get a bit over the years. But I'd say back then, I suppose this day and age, you have a lot more protection on pitches with linesmen and everything that's going on in umpires. I'd say back then, I can only imagine poor Packy. And I read phrases that the jersey was ripped off. And, you know, and that never happened to me, fortunately enough. But I can just imagine back then the scenes, I says, when things like that were happening and nobody passing any heat at all.
But sure, yeah, can I come in there again, if I may, please, about that McGarty thing? And of course, you know, in the decades afterwards, you know, in the long after he retired, you know, people from all over Ireland, including Galway or Mayo, and you know, and everyone else, said Packy McGarty was a great player. He's an outstanding player. But I think, personally, that the Leitrim team that eventually did win Connacht in 94, I think part of it for them was they didn't want to be patronised. They didn't want to have it said of them when they were long retired, that was a very good Leitrim team, that was a really good Leitrim team, maybe should have won, maybe they could have or should have won Connacht. And basically have the same thing said to them as was said to McGarty. And actually, really, really, while they spoke well of him in retirement, when he was a player, they you know, did everything they could to stop him, and which I suppose they were entitled to do. But there seems to be a consensus that there was an element of rough treatment, sort out McGarty and sort out Leitrim. And I think there was an element of that team of Leitrim team of the early 90s. You know, we're not going to be sorted out on the pitch and then patronised afterwards. We're going to try and win it. We want to win it, and maybe we can meet our opponents then as equals thereafter.
Yeah, you can understand how, you know, decades and generations of hurt finally well up. Packy McGarty ends up living in Dublin, I think, is kind of in Clondalkin. I think he had a grocery store according to Wikipedia. Yeah. You mentioned the 94 team. We should talk about that. Is Mickey Quinn the automatic from that team? Is there a debate to be had about who is the representative?
No.
But he would have been the, I think he would, Mickey would have been the Packy McGarty of his generation. Like, he made his county debut in 78, and he was still going, he was still basically going at the age of 37 in 1997. So, you know, he had a massive career. I remember, and Tommy, I think, was at this game as well. In 1983, Leitrim played Galway, and I think it was the Connacht semi-final in Carrick and Shannon. And the final score was a really low-scoring game, 1-8 to 1-6, but Leitrim really should have won the game. I always slag my Galway friends, and I said if Leitrim had won that game, that have saved Galway the embarrassment of losing to 12-man Dublin in the final. But and Mickey Quinn gave, I think, one of the... Now, maybe at the sands of time, or you'd be nostalgic about it. But I'd love to see a video of the game, because I think Mickey Quinn gave one of the all-time great individual performances in that game. And I remember I was only a junior reporter with the Sligo champion at the time. But I remember in my naivety, I thought that he'd win an All-Star that year, but he didn't actually win an All-Star. But if you think about it, that was 1983. So he won the All-Star about 7 years later, and then in 1994, he was probably the father figure on the Connacht team. But I mean, Tommy's brother was on the team, so he would know more about the inner workings and mean what role he played in it.
Well, he was Leitrim's first ever All Star in 1990, That 1983 performance at midfield is legendary. Senior debut in 78. There's the 83 game where he dominated the Galway midfield. There's 1990, the All-Star. 1994, finally, the Connacht title. And that's in, what, his 16th season? Or 70th season? And he's plays on to 97. So he has a longevity, the equal of Paddy McGarty as well. And of necessity, if you, and Emlyn might come in on this, of necessity, Leitrim teams historically have been physically small. A lot of times, just players who aren't physically big enough or who aren't athletic enough for serious counter football. Mickey Quinn was an absolute supreme athlete, and he had power and strength, heart, could go end to end for a whole game. So that meant Leitrim, when Mickey was playing, well, Leitrim had traction in midfield. They had presence in midfield. They had power there, and he was the engine, or one of them, the engine in the engine room for many, many years.
Yeah, and I'm interested in that and the physicality generally of Leitrim football. You just don't have a big enough pick when there's only 30,000 population. You have that immediately for the male population. You have that for the active male GAA population, and suddenly, you know, there isn't a huge pick, so you've got to get by with cunning and guile and as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, you've got to go by with what you have, and as you said, the pick isn't massive. And I suppose when I started out playing in around 2008, I suppose under Desi Dolan, we had a couple of big men, like in the boys, you know, there, like Gary McCluskey, Christy Carlin. They're probably a lot more physical. I suppose, you know, they're heavier kind of weighted men. The diet wasn't as efficient as it is now, and maybe the strength and condition, I suppose, is more of an emphasis now. But I think, even myself, I was probably heavier and stronger back in 2008 than I am now, even though I'm a lot leaner and maybe fitter-wise, you know. And I suppose it just depends on how you determine strength, I suppose. Some lads naturally just have it as well, in their inner ability just to be powerful men without even hitting the gym, you know. But like, the pick we have is limited, obviously, and I suppose nowadays, from a younger age, we're trying to get lads to be built up physically stronger, that they know when they're coming into their county teams. But at the same time, the way the game has gone, I think Dublin even show that athleticism nearly now is a bigger thing than actually having physical strength, because the amount of hits and that you see in games now in comparison to, I suppose, looking at games over the last number of months of games back in the 80s, 90s, like the batons and the physicality and the punches thrown in them games, you know, players nowadays wouldn't survive in it, you know. So the game has totally evolved as well, I think, in terms of needing to be that absolutely monster in the middle of the pitch. I think athleticism now is probably the main factor, and teams are kind of starting to change their mindset towards that.
Was there anybody else, Emlyn, that you thought might be in the shout or in the shake-up from
I suppose obviously 94 again, and I suppose Seamus Quinn is the other, obviously, I suppose, fella there, obviously an all-star from 94, and I think he was the last member of that panel to keep playing and finished up in the 2000s, and he was Leitrim's only ever representative for Aussie Rules back in 2000 as well, which is a massive achievement for himself, obviously, you know. But from listening to the two lads there, and they'd have a better knowledge than I would, and I'd back them with their expertise in this, but obviously from listening about Mickey Quinn, it'd be very hard to back against him. But I suppose another man you could throw into the mix, and as Colm O'Rourke was born and reared in Leitrim, I said, unless we claim him, he'd be another man we could throw into the mix. So good old vast man. So I said, he was another nomination, but I'm not sure if he got picked on the Mead one or not.
Listen, Colm O'Rourke spent a long time pretending he wasn't from Leitrim at all.
Well, that's fair enough, Tommy. We'll let him go.
And barely wanted to acknowledge that he came from the place. I think he's come around a bit more to it now. But you mentioned Seamus Quinn there, Ger. The best fullback of his era, bar Darren Fay. If we mostly accept that Darren Fay was the greatest, well, I think he was the greatest since John O'Keefe, and arguably better than John O'Keefe, who makes most people's team of the century, team of the millennium, as the greatest fullback. I would make the case that Darren Fay was greater. And I would say that Seamus Quinn was as good as Darren Fay, and not quite as quick. Fay was very unusual that he was so tall and powerful and yet very quick over the ground. But apart from that, Quinn was a spectacular fullback, and he wasn't of the modern type that happy to break the high ball in. I mean, Seamus Quinn was up in the air in a crowded goal mouth, take it down, burst his way out. He had footwork too. He wouldn't be ploughing his way out. A mixture of power and footwork and out the field. He was a tremendous player.
Just as an aside about Mickey Quinn, it shows how the genes work. So Mickey Quinn's sister, Patricia, was actually a very good athlete, and she's Colin Griffin's mother. So Patricia Quinn is married to Pori Griffin, and Colin Griffin is their son. So it's all in a little circle there around Aha Wilden and Ballinamore. And just as an aside, it's not totally connected with the Four Horsemen, but it has struck me over the years that Leitrim were very unlucky, tragically unlucky. We lost in my lifetime, we've lost three outstanding footballers at the peak of their careers. We had Sean Layden, who Leitrim won the Connacht Under 21 Championship in 1977, and he was one of the outstanding players on it, and actually. Leitrim played Kerry in a very famous match in the All-Ireland semi-final. It was a week after Kerry had been beaten by Dublin in the All-Ireland semi-final, and it was about, you know, like there was four or five guys from that team on the Kerry under 21 team, including one Owen Liston, who wasn't known nationally at that stage, but they played Leitrim in Carrick and Shannon. Leitrim gave them a damn good match. There's about 5 points in it at the end, but Sean Layden was subsequently killed. And then more recently, you had Shane McGettigan, who was tragically killed in a building accident in Boston. He'd be Charlie's son. But he was just at the cusp of, I would say, having an outstanding career. He'd been an outstanding college player with Mels, and he was just making the breakthrough at Leitrim. And then, of course, more recently, actually, even though it's hard to believe, it was 10 years ago, you had Finney McGuinness, who was killed following an accidental clash in the field. So I don't know of any other county that has had such a tragic history in terms of losing players in the peak of the career. And I thought it was important to make that point. No,
it is absolutely a fair point to bring up. Just to recap then, we have Eddie Leddy and Francis Cryan. So a middle distance runner and a rower, and then two Gaelic footballers, Paddy McGarty and Mickey Quinn. So far, we've had a lot of debate. There's been essentially, Sean, your job is to come and select, and Tommy, you get to edit, and then Emily gets to make a case for somebody else. But it sounds like we have peace between North and South. It's like the Lilliput in reverse. Everybody's actually going to be happy with this, Tommy.
Well, not saying that we are such an evolved species in Leitrim that we're able to put aside all tribal differences, much as I'd like to be able to say that. It's just that, as you may have suspected by now, Ger, the old Hall of Fame isn't particularly lengthy in Leitrim. You know, we didn't have to agonise over dozens of choices before we narrowed it down. I count myself lucky to be able to muster up four at all, really, and glad to have them, and glad to be able to salute them. I don't know what Sean and Emlyn feel. I mean, Mickey Martin is Michael Martin. Sean mentioned him already. Would be the fifth horse of the apocalypse type thing. Michael Martin he had star quality, real star quality. Long blonde hair, an absolute speed merchant. Played for Leitrim from, I guess, the age of 16, 17. Again, another vast career of maybe 18 or 19 years. He was on the Ireland International Rules team in 84, and a replacement all-star, I think, in 77. And if I might digress for a moment, Ger, Michael Martin often strikes me as a case for the as an example of, is it ethically questionable? Is it even morally questionable? Is morally or ethically questionable that the GAA has ordained it and we all accept it, that your talent is determined not by the limits of your ability, but by an accident of birth, of geography? If you happen to be born, wherever you're born, that to some degree will set to the limits of your talent or of your career in sport. And Mickey Martin was a wonderful sportsman, footballer, brilliant soccer player too. Why should Mickey Martin or anyone else have a boundary set to their talent by an accident of birth, by your geographical origins? And to me, I've tossed and turned around this subject, this issue in my head many times over the years. But I think there is something essentially, and Mickey Martin's talent was wasted. He was a beautiful sportsman.
I think that you're 100% correct. And I think that the whole fixtures debate feeds off this. And I hope that after the interregnum, where we've all had a little bit of downtime, that conversation will actually take off again. It's not a conversation for Mount Rushmore, unfortunately.
No.
But because we're out of time, but it is actually the perfect point to finish this on, because, you know, there are so many brilliant players. Even when we're doing this, how do we judge the criteria? Like, when, so we need the outside. It was great to get Emily on to talk about a family relation who is also widely revered, talking about Packy in the way he did, because it kind of validates everything. It's and it's a weird system that there's no stats, there's no stat line that we can actually just go and say, well, he performed, he had 15 games. Over those 15 games, he scored an average of 6 points a game against top quality opposition, four of whom were all stars. Therefore, you know, he gets this magic score that we pump in and go, he's one of the top 10 players of all time. Yeah. We can't do that. And we can't do it because the competition is not fair. And you guys, with your population of 30,000 in the same championship as Dublin with their population of 1.5 million, is a bit ludicrous, really.
And not to mention the fact that Dublin gets, if I think off the top of my head, gets 17.2 million in coaching grants over the last, over the last 10 years, or Leitrim gets whatever it is, less than a million. So. But that's a debate for another day.
We've just opened a can of worms. I'm going to close it. The leader of Mount Rushmore. My thanks to Emily Mulligan, Tommy Collins, Sean McGoldrick. The four on the Mount Rushmore in Leitrim are Eddie Leddy, Francis Cryan, Paddy McGarty, and Mickey Quinn. Where are they going? Where is this mountain?
There's a mountain called O'Rourke's Table outside Drumahair, which is very famous. It was made famous by the poet Thomas Moore. So I think that might be the suitable one.
We'll keep it in the north, Leitrim. We'll keep it up north.
Yes.
You have been bulbing up there already, Sean.
But that's in Sligo.
We'll take it. We'll take it.
It sounds good, though. It sounds like a proper place for it, all right.
It does. That is this week's. That's it for Leitrim's Mount Rushmore. Thanks, lads.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks, sir.
OTB AM's Mount Rushmore.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.